Welcome to Project Chatter, the podcast where PPM experts from various sectors talk about the latest trends. Listen to Val and Dale as they talk about tried and tested best practices and share their unfiltered thoughts about the industry. Whether you're here to learn how to progress your career, improve your project control skills, or just want to hear an Aussie and South African rant about projects, then you've come to the right place. Welcome to the Project Chatter podcast with your hosts, Dale Fung and Val Matthews.
This podcast is brought to you by Plan Academy. Plan Academy is the world's leading learning site for anyone working in construction project management or project controls.
At Plan Academy, you learn construction planning and scheduling theory, how to master scheduling software like Primavera P6, and even advanced construction scheduling techniques.
Plan Academy's courses are 100% online and at your own pace. You can learn at the office, at site, from home, anywhere. Check out planacademy.com today for free sample lessons and tons of free video.
Hey everyone, this episode is brought to you by JustDo.com. JustDo is a great business and project management tool we've been using here at Project Chatter.
I agree, Val. I like to keep things simple and JustDo is perfect for that. But I do know it's got a lot of powerful functionality as well. And one of my favorites is the task-specific chat.
Absolutely. And for all you slackers, don't wait for Monday. Check out JustDo.com. Now on with the pod.
Hello, project people. Welcome to the Project Chatter podcast. I am Val Matthews, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Dale Fung.
Hey, Val. Hey, folks.
Hey, buddy. Just a reminder to listeners to hit that subscribe button on whichever platform you listen to your good podcasts on, and we are also on YouTube, so check out for our channel for bonus bits. On this episode, we are joined by Mr. Vin. How are you, Vin?
Good. Thanks for having me. Really excited to kind of dive into this podcast. I love the way you both approach it. We can go anywhere.
We can cool. We can do anything. We can go anywhere. We can. Yeah, it's going to be free play. What we call freedom within a framework. So we'll try and bring it back to project management. But before we do, we're going to be talking about all sorts from presentation to storytelling to communication. But before we do, here's Dale with the bio.
Thanks, Val. This is a great bio because there's three sections. So I'll take you through it. So Vin, the keynote speaker, there are common threads between the worlds of business and magic. Timing, practice, skills, connection, momentum, persuasion, perspective, and influence. Vin has made the art of weaving those threads into messages that matter his life's work. His goal is to move the audience to take life and career-changing action, to inspire them, lift them up, and leave them with a feeling of wonder and empowerment, to see the possible in the impossible, to feel the magic in the metaphors, and to find the solutions that set success in motion. Vin the entrepreneur. Several years ago, Vin and three good friends left professional careers in accounting and pharmacy to pursue a dream. Since then, they've built an online platform that now teaches magic to over 800,000 students from all over the globe. Vin was honored to be awarded with South Australia Young Entrepreneur of the Year for this endeavor. Vin the magician. For more than 15 years, Vin has pursued his passion for magic. This mesmerizing, mysterious art form has the ability to compel audiences to shift perspectives, suspend disbelief, entertain with wonder, and inspire people in extraordinary ways. It is his exciting privilege to share this fascinating art with people all over the globe. He was honored to perform at The Fringe from 2012 to 2015 and to have won top reviewed show and top voted for show. Welcome, Vin Zhang. I feel like we're getting three for the price of one.
Certainly are.
Yep. You know, I've never gotten used to just sitting there listening to people read up my introduction. Like the whole time you're reading that, I'm just like, I want to vomit in the back of my throat. It's just, I've never gotten used to just listening to that. It's just listening why I'm brilliant. And you said it so eloquently. So thank you, Dale. I'm not quite impressive as you said that I am, but thank you.
Well, you know what? It is 11 p.m. in the UK and I'm a couple of scotches down, so I'm surprised I got through that.
Yeah, it was so poetic. I even thought for a second, who is this brilliant man? He's brilliant, so thank you.
He's got a gift.
Stop it. Thank you. He's such a flirt, Val, isn't he?
I'm married, Dale, just letting you know.
Oh well, I know you Aussies. I know what you like, so we got to be careful. Yeah, I'm married too, by the way, but it's all good. But no, it's a pleasure to have you on the pod, Vin. As Val said, we you know, we can go all over the show with this. But before we do that, I actually wanted to start off with just a bit of the backdrop. And we heard bits and bobs there as to, you know, how you sort of fell into magic and obviously into the speaking and motivation, all that. But I wonder if you could give us sort of how it started out for you. I mean, you know, if people go in the YouTube view, they can get your story. But there's some really worthwhile elements of repeating in that, because I feel like there's a lot of turning points, or perhaps points where you realize you weren't in the right place, and it took you to where you are today. And it's that courage, I think, to make those tough decisions at times.
Yeah, look, I mean, I'm definitely going to try to keep our listeners in the forefront of my mind while I share these. And something that comes to mind immediately, Dale, is that when I was young, I had no self-confidence. People see me now and they go, wow, look, you know, you've got so much confidence and whatnot. But when I was young, oh man, I was a textbook loser. The typical one you see in movies, that was me. I barely spoke up. I always had crushes, never dared tell them, you know, always not picked for sports teams and whatnot. Just textbook loser. And I found magic one day. And the way I found it was hilarious. My parents used to drop me off at the library after school because that way they could get an extra 3 to 4 hours of work in, and it was basically free childcare. Asians are so resourceful like that.
Oh, wow.
So, so my local librarian got to know me very well. She was so sweet. And I remember one day after having been at free childcare for about 3 years, she comes up to me and she goes, I always see you playing with cards. And the reason I was playing with cards was because, you know, during Vietnamese New Year or Chinese New Year, our family's always gambling. And so as gifts, all I got were the leftover cards, really expensive plastic cards. Yeah. So she saw me playing with cards all the time, and all I would play was Snap or Go Fish. And she brings over a magic book and she goes, why don't you try doing some tricks, honey? And I stole that magic book. I never returned it because it was so amazing. Yeah, I actually still do have it. It's the Australian hand guide to magic. And I stole it. It's hilarious. I use it in my workshops to show my students. But I stole it because the very first time I performed a piece of magic, people, instead of not noticing me, noticed me. And for the first time in my life as a kid, other kids, especially some of the ladies, were like, wow, you're amazing. And I went, I am. I need to obsess over this. Who cares about studying math and algebra? So then I obsessed over magic. And then magic became a problem. I then, after that, wasn't able to talk to you if I didn't show you a trick first. So if I had unfortunately left the packet of cards at home that day at school, I couldn't talk to anyone. And so magic, something started as a beautiful gift and an amazing thing, turned into a huge problem by the time I hit university. I couldn't talk to people without my packet of cards. All of my confidence was attached to the packet of cards, which taught me about contextual confidence. I was contextually confident when I had my packet of cards. And then I also had a friend named Hui, and Hui was the shyest guy I've ever come across, more shy than me, which was unbelievable, which kind of gave me a little bit of confidence. I was like, yes, at least I'm better than Hui. But sorry, I don't mean to be a monster, but I genuinely thought that at the time. And one day I saw Hui go to a camp we all went to. And he plays guitar. And around the campfire, he brought the guitar. And I never have seen this guy more confident in my life. And I went, I never knew you were like this, Hui. What the hell? I've known you your whole life. And he played these beautiful songs and he was talking to all the girls and whatnot. And I went, wow. And again, Hui was contextually confident when he had his instrument. And then the dots all connected to me. I went, huh. This is why communication is so important, because when you train your voice, that's an instrument you carry everywhere you go. And one of the reasons why communication is so important is when you learn to work on your voice and your communication skills, that's an instrument you can't leave home. That's an instrument you bring everywhere. It's why I fundamentally believe that when you improve communication skills, you improve all areas of life, because you bring your voice everywhere you go. So that's one of the reasons why I think, you know, hopefully trying to connect it to our audience and project managers, is that this is an instrument that you can work on. And once you do, you bring that level of confidence everywhere you go. And when you're more confident, you do things better.
That's fascinating. I really find that. I think everyone has this, we talk about this armor, right? You put on And I guess those of us in the more traditional workspace, when you go into the office, you put on the suit and the tie and it's your armor, right? But I guess virtual working from home and Zoom has let people into each other's lives. And so the armor has come off in a sense, which is one silver lining in this virtual world we're currently living in. But I'm wondering then, it's interesting. Can you talk a little bit about that transition to say, actually, I don't need this guitar, this pack of cards? And so perhaps for other people, I don't need this suit. I don't need to put on this persona. I can be me. And you know, obviously confidence comes, there, off comes the suit.
I'm taking off the suit and unbuttoning the button just because you said that. Let's get a bit vulnerable, shall we?
There we go.
Sure.
Next level.
But don't tell me to take my pants off because we're not that at that point yet, okay, of our friendship. So pants stay on, gentlemen. yes, I definitely can. And look, for me, it was when I noticed that I had to build more than technical skill was the journey of – let me talk more to the point of communication, when I realized communication was important, you know, not just the technical side. I wanted to leave university to become a professional magician, and my parents hated the idea. Obviously, Phung, you can, sorry, Dale, you can relate. You're part Vietnamese, obviously, by your last name. So my Vietnamese parents were like, you know, you want to do what? What the hell you want to be the Harry Potter? No, very bad boy. So I was like, shit, they're not going to allow me to do this. So look, I had to become successful as a magician to show them that I was able to make money as a magician before they allowed for it. I mean, my story I share in my keynote is a very short version. The full version was I had to become successful as a magician first to prove to them I can make hard cash with this. And it was a very frustrating journey because in the world of magic, you get taught that to become successful, you've got to become technically brilliant. And, you know, sleight of hand wise, technically brilliant. That's what I was taught in university. That's what I was taught in high school, that the more technically brilliant you become, the more successful you become. It's kind of something we teach. I spent thousands of hours building technical skill, thousands of hours. And I got pretty technically good. I won't be humble there for a second. 9.5 out of 10. Technically, I became very good as a magician. But I wasn't successful and I couldn't understand why. And there was another magician in my town. I won't name him. However, he wasn't technically as brilliant as me, but he got all the gigs. And it drove me insane. Because I would sometimes even know where he was working, come out and watch him perform. And I'll just, in my head, startling, be like, that's a very poorly executed double lift. That wasn't even a good Erdenes color change. That was disgusting. Why are people clapping? I don't understand. And I got really bitter about it. And then one day I came across a book called The Creative Art of Showmanship by Darwin Ortiz. And my whole life I've been consuming books on technical skill. This was the first book I came across that talked about showmanship. Never come across it before. And I realized this was the missing ingredient that the world had forgot to tell me about, or the area of magic had forgotten to tell me about. Because technically I was a 9 out of 10, right? But my ability to communicate was a 3 out of 10. So do you think people were perceiving me as a 9 out of 10 or a 3 out of 10? You're only as good as you can communicate.
Yeah.
And the moment I started improving my showmanship, my world changed. My world changed because I was now able to amplify the magic. I could make the magic so much more amazing with my ability to communicate, the ability to storytell. And that was the pivotal moment when I really wanted to, you know, win more gigs than this magician, that I went, wow, no wonder I couldn't find a girlfriend when I was young. I wasn't able to communicate my value that I had to offer. As a man, I wasn't able to communicate that value. No wonder my business when I was unsuccessful. I'm not able to communicate the value. I used to just blame the world. I used to just blame the girl. I was like, oh, damn them. They can't see what they're missing out on. You know, and because I blamed others, I lost all power until I said, you know what? No, it's actually my fault that I'm not able to communicate to the world the brilliance I have inside. So showmanship, you know, the reason I use the tagline, amplify the best parts of who you are, is so many of us, this is going to sound very cheesy, and I know some of your listeners might be lactose intolerant, but just bear with it. All of you are amazing. You truly are. I believe everyone has something amazing inside. And so often that amazing inside you goes unnoticed, goes unseen, goes unheard, because we haven't learned how to communicate that amazing to the rest of the world. We must learn how to do this. Otherwise, the world misses out. And if you don't do it for yourself, do it for the benefit of everybody else, because we all have something amazing to give. That's all the lactose. That's it.
Lactose. I love that. It's really important. I think going, you know, for us, being in project management, it's obviously a really high pressure environment. And you can imagine, right? You're charged with this extremely important role. You've got a team that are relying on you. You've got upper management that are expecting some type of response. And above all, like you said, if your communication is low, but you're technically competent, you're still perceived as a low communicator, and that affects your ability to influence and negotiate and align. And part of this is there's a lot of politics in these projects. They're getting bigger and bigger in every time. So what we wanted to do is at least with you on and talking about your transformation in communication, and you bring this really good point about everyone's got an amazing capability inside, and sometimes the world doesn't get to see it. And I guess a communication is some type of vehicle to get it out there. What would you suggest? I mean, not giving away all your secrets, because you are a magician after all. But
it's okay. I'm happy to.
Yeah. One Adelaide boy to another. What communication methods would you think would be useful for a project manager who was leading a team and had very critical things to present?
What I'll say is this. To start with, I'll say it's a reframe of how you think about your voice. Because think about it. When we're communicating, what we're doing is we're trying to move people. We're trying to influence people to do something we need them to do, whether, you know, I need something done on time, or I need something by this date, or, you know, et cetera. When we need to influence people, we have to do a big reframe in our heads. And this is often one that most people are a little bit resistant to, I find. And it's that, especially if they're technically minded, is I say, you have to start looking at your voice as an instrument. Because it is. And you have to view your voice as an instrument. And you have to think about this in this way, first of all. People don't use a piano. People don't use a guitar. Why do you use your voice? People play the piano. People play the guitar. You should play with your voice. Because this is the analogy I use. I could bring to you the greatest music written by Beethoven, and if I play it poorly, will you perceive it to be the greatest piece of music? No, you won't. So you could have the greatest plan. You could have the greatest idea, the greatest vision as a project manager. But if you play your instrument poorly, will your people perceive that to be an inspiring plan, an inspiring vision, an inspiring message? They won't. Mm. So to me, the art of influence not only is about what you say, it's about how you say it. And forever, there's this debate, which drives me insane, where they say, is what you say more important or is how you say it? The answer is both. Why do we have to pick one or the other? We should be able to have both. Why do we have to have our cake and then not eat it? Have your cake and bloody eat it too. Why? You can have both. Just have both. So to me, both are equally as important. So the first thing you've got to wrap your head around is how you say something actually matters. When you speak, what is the soundtrack that lives underneath your voice? Is it a soundtrack that inspires? Is it a soundtrack that can bore? Is it a soundtrack that moves? So again, the first thing I say to people is that big transition. Your voice is an instrument. Don't be afraid to play it in a way that is more influential. And then, you know, it's kind of a step-by-step thing. Then I kind of, it's funny, I say this like I'm a monster, but when people come to my workshops, I break them down slowly. We start with a mindset breakdown, and then we break you down more granular. And the next way I break them down is there's a big LED light sign. You can't see it because it's too bright, but it says hashtag break the mold. And if you don't mind, I do have to tell this story to set this up. When I was 12, again, you heard the story, textbook loser, you know, I've already painted that picture. There was this girl I really, really adored in my class. Her name was Stacy, beautiful blonde hair. Oh, and I really wanted her attention. I couldn't get her attention. However, my best friend Lenny could. Lenny was always, he had an Adidas jacket that was reversible and that was incredible in the mid-90s. I couldn't afford one. He had it, so all the girls loved it because he would let them borrow it during a cold day, the bastard. And I just had a shitty secondhand jumper. And all the girls loved him because he also was the athletic, had a six-pack. Disgusting how you can have a six-pack at 12. And I asked Lenny for advice. I said, Lenny, how do I get a girlfriend? Please help me. And he goes, oh, it's easy, man. Just be funny. And I was like, sounds easy enough. So I went on to Yahoo and Yahooed how to be funny. And I found a brilliant joke. And I remember in class, there was this natural pause. And I turned to Stacey and I said, Stacey, did you know that the first French fry was not cooked in France? It was cooked in Greece. Obviously, no one laughed. Like, none of you are laughing right now. And no, don't give me that pity laugh, Val. No, don't.
That's the dad joke
laugh. No one laughed. Yeah. And no one laughed. And then worse, Stacey turned around and Stacey looked me square on in the eyes and she said, you're not funny. Stop trying to be like Lenny. Crushed my soul. Mm. I know. What a bitch. And it's okay. I still harbor a little bit of hatred there for her, but that's okay. We're all human. But I she put me back in my mold. I tried to be funny for a moment and she put me back in my mold. The whole year didn't try to be funny again until I moved schools. And I moved schools a total of 5 times in my life. I won't go into why, but maybe ask me later. But well, I moved schools 5 times. And at this new school, I realized that all the kids had no preconceived ideas of who I was as a human being. So I realized there was no mold for me. Oh, I can be anyone I want. Oh, this is cool. So I tried being a bully because I was sick of being bullied. It didn't work because then they realized I wasn't one. Moved schools again. Realized I had an opportunity to break out of my mold again because no one had preconceived ideas of who I was. There I became the entrepreneurial Vin. And that's the Vin that stuck. And at that school, that third time when I became the entrepreneurial Vin, I also asked my mom and dad for me to change my name. My name isn't Vin originally. My name wasn't Vin originally. My original name is Kwang. But I was so sick and tired of who Kwang was. I didn't want to be that person anymore. So I asked my mom and dad, I pleaded them, please let me change my name. Let me recreate this person. And they allowed me to do it in my early teens. So I changed my name to Vin. And I broke the mold. I broke the mold. And I told this story to the listeners now. And I tell this story in my classes because I say to my students, today you're in a new school. Today you are in a new class. There is no mold for you here. And I ask you to break the mold as you explore how to communicate effectively. The way you currently speak right now, don't be so attached to it because people are so attached to the way they speak. When I ask them to play with their voice, they're like, no, Vin, I can't do that. It's inauthentic. And I'm like, no, you're wrong. You're wrong. And I'm happy to tell you this to your face. You're wrong. The way you currently speak is not your natural voice. The way you currently speak is your habitual voice. Stop being so attached to who you are in the present that you don't give the future version of you a chance. Stop. And we stop that now. So then I get my students to break out of the mold. We break things down slowly, mentally, physically, everything. And we get them to a point where they're willing to explore their voice as an instrument. We've all lost our natural voices at the age of 3. And the voices we have now is a habitual voice. And the way you develop your habitual voice is all of the people that you've admired when you were young, you've adopted their vocal habits. That's why we have the voices we have now. And then what we're trying to do is go back to our natural voice where we can access the full instrument. We can access all of the keys. The piano has 88 keys. And so often people have just become very familiar with these keys here. And then when I ask them to play with these keys, and dare I say it, I dare ask you to play with these, they go, no, Vin, that's fake. I'm like, how can it be fake? You just made the sound. You just made it. It's not fake. Yeah, so exactly. To me, this is the reframe, and then I'll shut up and let you all jump in as well, is that I say to them, you've just become so familiar with these 12 keys that when I ask you to play with these keys over here, it's not fake, it's not phony, it's not inauthentic. It's just unfamiliar. So there's so much mental work that has to be done when you want to deal with people and how they communicate that you can't immediately just go, oh, just do this. You can't. It's a psychological process that you have to take people through before they're willing to explore their instrument. Mm. I'll shut up for a second. Sorry, I talked too much.
No, this is perfect because this is exactly what we wanted. We wanted to get some insight into this. And I think for people that are listening, that are looking at and saying, well, why aren't I effective? They're probably going in there going, well, I'm far more technical than that guy over there, but that guy seems to be far more influential. I think you really hit the point. And I think Dale and I have been in project meetings where there's people that are talking and their technical form is terrible, but they are excellent at the communication side of things.
Yes.
And they walk out and everyone's going like, that's a great idea. Really? Now, Dale's laughing because he knows I'm right. This has happened in a meeting. We're like, what the WTF? What happened just then? We just got bamboozled by words. And so, and I've watched some of your YouTube videos, and I've been inspired by some of your talks. And I know you know, you travel the world doing this, and you really do put an emphasis on tonality, timber, the kind of playing within the frame of the voice, and not just necessarily the tone, but you know, playing all of the keyboard, if you like. Is there practices or training you do? You warm up, you know, if you got like a little pre-sesh. So let's say you're going, bringing this back to the project team and the people in projects, they're going into a big review. Is there some things they can do to practice their voice to get it, like maybe it's about volume, you know, or presence, you know, having that, because you have that, you have like this, it's coming from the diaphragm, it's coming from somewhere, it's not up here. Is there some tips that you would say, look, yeah, maybe it's some breathing, maybe there's some other things you can do to stretch the vocals to get them ready like a singer? What's your view on that?
Definitely. Happy to dive into this. And I just wanted to say, the reason I was laughing when you were saying that you were describing the person that has no substance but is all showman. And the reason I'm laughing, because that's me. And, you know, I feel like you're describing me right there. It's the same thing. It's what I tell my students. When my students come to me, I tell them, look, I'm basically just an empty shell of a human being. And I'm here to teach all of you how to change the world, because you are the people who have the knowledge on how to change the world. What I've learned how to master is the art of showmanship. And it's why I've gone back into study. I'm paying some university professors to teach me more, because I'm trying to learn. Because I now recognize my own flaws, is that I can come across as that to a lot of people at times. The people who are going to change the world are the people who are technically minded, who understand exactly how. The reason why we don't progress is because people who are technically brilliant don't learn how to communicate effectively and inspire. And then we address one more thing before we go into the pragmatics. The classic example here, dare I bring up this person, is Elon Musk. And this is not me being critical, because, man, I am just the bogan from South Australia, from the northern suburbs, hashtag ghetto. Who am I to even judge anything he's doing? He is amazing. I am blown away by the impact Elon Musk has. But people often say, I'm just going to let my actions speak for themselves. Unless you are Elon Musk, your actions will not speak for themselves. Unless you're a unicorn, you cannot just rely on your technical ability. Unless you are Elon Musk, you cannot just rely on your technical ability. There's very few people who are going to become successful riding on technical ability alone. So again, Elon Musk, exception. Okay. But also, I just would invite you to imagine Elon Musk had, he took his communication skills from where it is and amped it up by 10. Imagine where he would be. Imagine how much more people would be inspired, and how much more people would buy. He would be able to get us into space travel in the next 10 years, because he would just own the market. So don't use it as an excuse. Don't just go, oh, I'm going to let my actions speak for itself. No, speak for your actions too. Both. The answer is both. Now, when it comes to technicalities, there are five core foundations when it comes to using your voice. Because now when you think about using your voice as a musical instrument, these five foundations make sense. The first one is rate of speech. All right? Rate of speech is one way in which you can use your voice effectively. Now, when people don't think about rate of speech, what happens is we fall victim to a default rate of speech. So just for example, because of experiential learning, what happens when I fall victim to a default rate of speech like I am right now is, after a while, everything I say becomes monotonous. It does. It becomes monotonous. And that's when you pay no attention to it. One simple rule you can apply is, if what you're saying is very important, slow down. So, you know, this, doesn't that just seem critical? But there was nothing important there. But it seems really critical, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's because I've slowed down. And that's the form of a verbal highlight that allows people to let you know what to focus on. This is what I want you to focus on. And then this other bit is not as important, so I'll speak quickly. Otherwise, when you stick to a default rate of speech and you don't vary your rate of speech, like I'm going to do right now just for experiential learning purposes, is everything after a while just becomes mumbo jumbo and all kind of clumps together. Slowing down and speeding up allows you to chunk what you're saying, therefore making you more effective as a communicator. Number one, that's rate of speech. So bring awareness to this. Second thing is your volume. Volume has a scale from 1 to 10. Right now, I'm speaking to all of you at, I would say, about a 5 or a 6. Okay, this is not my, you know, if I was comfortable is probably this for me, because this doesn't take any energy. This for me is easy. And notice immediately, this is probably a 3 out of 10. And whereas I push a bit more volume because I realize the value that I can add as a human being is not just in the words that I say, but the value that I can add is also the energy that I give. And the energy that I give is through my volume. I can be generous via my volume, not just my money or my time. I can also be generous with my energy. So I'm giving you all this, hopefully being generous in that sense. So to me, when you're speaking at about a 5 or a 6 out of 10, the following qualities come across. You come across as being more confident. You come across as having more authority. You come across as having more vitality. And you come across as if you believe in the things that you say. That feeling of, wow, this person really believes in what they say. They come across as really passionate. See, all of you perceive, if you perceive me to be someone who's passionate right now or charismatic, that is all controlled via the use of my volume right now. A huge part of it is due to my volume. Mm. And when I pull back, and again, experiential learning, if I give you this version of me, which is dramatically less, think about my level of confidence that I'm portraying. Think about my level of authority, my level of vitality. Does it seem like I believe in the things that I'm saying? Notice how volume alone shifts so many things. And this is because most people don't think about what their vocal image is saying about them. They're all so focused on their visual image. We spend a lot of time dressing ourselves up and looking good and doing our hair and whatnot. But when's the last time you thought about your vocal image? What's your vocal image saying about you? So we're bringing attention to vocal image here as project managers. So volume, critical. If you are used to a low volume, bump your volume up. Give more. And think of it in terms of generosity. That's how I think of it. Anytime I speak to my wife, my son, you both, or anybody else, I think to myself, generosity is one of my core traits. I like one of my core values. And I want to radiate generosity. So I can be generous every day in giving you more of my energy. And my singing teacher used to say this all the time. And I'm not doing singing classes to become a singer. I'm just trying to learn more as a communicator. And she always says, if you can't play it beautifully, then don't play it all then. That's what you used to say to me all the time. And I took so much from that. And she goes, why are you saving up your energy for? When you rest, it resets anyway. Play beautifully for your wife and your children, Vin. Play beautifully for your clients. Stop being lazy with your voice. And I love that. I love that. So to me, I now try to play beautifully for those I come in touch with, because this is a way to give energy. It's a way to be generous. Second thing, volume. Third thing is pitch and melody. So pitch and melody is simple, and you both may know this, so this may be slightly nauseating for you both, but let's share it with the listeners. But there's a melody that lives underneath your voice. So if I played a sad piano song and you listen to the sad piano song, it's just a piano song, you'll feel sad. If I played an inspiring piano song, you'll feel inspired. And that's what my singing teacher did for me. She played a beautiful song and she goes, how do you feel? And I'm like, oh, I feel lovey-dovey. And then she played another song and she goes, how do you feel? And I go, oh shit, that's pretty sad. And she goes, look, isn't it interesting? None of these piano songs had any words, yet it communicated a world of meaning to you. There's a melody that lives underneath your voice. And to all of you listening right now, there is a melody that lives underneath your voice. That's why we say, oh, when Dale or when, you know, Val walks into the room, they lift the energy in the room. They say this because of the melody that lives underneath your voice. And we've got to become more aware of what melody lives underneath our voice. It's why some people can walk into a room and just sap the energy out. You know, it's because if I just walk into a room and just play you a soul-sucking kind of song, then it just robs you of energy, doesn't it? And it does. It truly does. As you experience this just through this podcast. So we've got to become more aware of this instrument. What songs are we singing? Are we singing songs of inspiration and motivation, happiness? And look, I'm not saying it's not important to sing sad songs. It's important. It's important, just like through the cartoon Inside Out. You know, it's important to express sadness. But what is the default melody that comes out of your voice? Third thing, melody and pitch. The fourth thing is tonality. And tonality is the emotion that lives underneath your voice. Emotion. See, it's different from pitch and melody. Pitch and melody is the different notes you can hit. Tonality is the emotion. Try this for me if you both don't mind. Val, could you do this for me? Could you make a disgusted face for me, Val? Make a disgusted face. Really like, oh, you've got poo on your fingers because you just changed your child's nappy. Yeah, and just kind of talk with it. Disgusted, talk with it.
Oh, that's disgusting.
I hate it. Okay, good. So a simple example of you sound kind of disgusted there. And I want you, Dale, to, if you could just look really surprised, and could you talk with that and just...
This is really surprising.
Okay, just yeah, okay. So a simple little example of you sounded more surprised. So what people don't realize is that your face is the remote control that allows you to add emotion into your words. Your face is the remote control that allows you to add emotion into your words. What people simply don't realize, especially in this virtual environment and in person, is we get stuck in a default face. And when we get stuck in a default face, there's no emotion when we speak. And for those of you who can see me, you can see it now, but I'll give you blank face Vin. And for those of you who can hear it, you can hear blank face Vin. So if I speak to you without moving my face, what happens is I rob myself of all emotion. And when I don't move my face at all, this is a very dramatic example of blank face emotion. This is what happens to a lot of people virtually. And notice how the moment I do this, I no longer am easy for you to connect to. And it's because I'm not moving my face. So you've got to become conscious. You've got to add emotion to your words, especially as leaders and project managers. Because when you humanize yourself, people's, you know, they stop looking at you as this kind of robot or this person that has no feelings. Because we all have feelings, let's face it. And to humanize yourself is to add more emotion into your communication. And to add more emotion, you've got to move your face. So think of it simply. If you want to move people, move your face. And the final thing I'll say is the pause. Again, back to the tonality for a second. It's why sometimes singers, they sing on America's Got Talent, Australia's Got Talent, Britain's Got Talent. And then people go, I just didn't quite feel the song. Simon Cowell would say, I didn't quite feel the song. It's not there, right? And then it's a terrible English accent. But there's no feeling. It's because they didn't move their face. Final one is the pause. Many people are afraid of the pause. But the pause is one of the most beautiful things in the world of music. When you listen to orchestral music and it pauses, oh, so beautiful. And the reason it's beautiful in music is because, let's relate it to communication. When I tell you something and I'm singing a song of happiness and I'm telling you something I'm really happy about and then I pause, it's a pause of happiness. But then when I'm telling you something that is, again, can seem quite sad and tragic and I pause, it's a pause of sadness. So what the pause does is it intensifies the previous emotion. That's what the pause is very powerful for. It's why some people use it in sales to be tactical to sell. But the pause intensifies the previous emotion and that allows a whole world of strategy to use more effectively as a communicator. But more than this, the pause is great because when you pause, you give people time to process what you've just said. So as the listeners right now, you just process what I've just said. You've kind of done that again. And when you don't pause as a communicator, and I'll give you an example of that right now, and I just keep talking, then I give you no time to process anything that I've just said. Therefore, if you don't process anything that I've just said, if I give no time for you to process, there's no influence happening. Influence is when you give people time to process. And it's very easy as project managers and leaders to overwhelm our people when we talk without pausing. Because you're not giving them any time to understand and process. Another reason for the pause is when you pause, you give people time to ask you questions to enhance clarity. And when there's more clarity, there's more influence. And the final reason to get really comfortable with the pause at the foundational level is it gets rid of all the ums and the ahs, or your filler words and your non-words. When you're comfortable with silence, then you start to reduce the filler and non-words. Because when you use a lot of filler words, which are and, so, like, do you know what I mean? Non-words, when you get rid of those, it helps you increase the clarity of your message. And again, an example. Imagine I, you know, was talking about, you know, the five core foundations, and I was going through rate of speech, and you know, like, and then I get to notice how that decreases the clarity of my communication. when you become more comfortable with the pause, you get rid of all of those. It's like playing music. Imagine you're playing music and you're like playing Twinkle Twinkle Little Star and you're going da 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 da. Little ums and ahs are little off-tune things, causes distractions and it distracts people from the message. These are the five core foundations of great communication. You start to wrap your head around, oh, my voice is an instrument, but these are the ways I can manipulate the instrument to become more effective. Man, my wife always tells me you talk too much and it's so bloody true, isn't it? You know why this is? It's because people pay me to speak. That's why I've developed this awful habit. So sorry. Thank you for listening. Right. You guys are great listeners.
No. I think we were really engaged. Obviously, you do this profession and then the vocation is like, well, if you're paid to do it, then you get good at the craft and you're obviously expressing that through this podcast. And we've done this before. We had a podcast last week with Steve Wake. Again, highly technical, highly experienced person. Dale and I just sat back and listened. We were so engaged, weren't we, Dale? It's fantastic to have people like you on the pod. I think Dale's got some questions for you, though.
No, it's truly amazing.
You're both brilliant listeners.
Yeah, it's great. Five real handy tips, pointers, something that people can actually use, practice, and try and get good at. Because often we talk about good communication, and people go, what do I do? Well, just get good at it. But these are really great. If they don't know how to do this, they can obviously get in touch with you and get hold of your workshop. But I also want to give you kudos, Vin, because for once, Val was not the person to bring up Elon Musk. So fantastic. Thank you, Vin, for doing that. You're the first guest that's done it before him. So thank you.
Damn it. Good work.
But point number four, tonality, reminded me of, whenever you're trying to negotiate for a new phone contract or broadband, they say smile because the person on the other side can actually hear you smiling, even though they can't see you. So it's great that there's real life examples, it's all coming together. But I want to shift gear slightly, right? I want to ask you about the other instrument we have in communication skills, and that's our ears. And you touched on listening. How important is listening as a communication skill?
Basically the other 50%.
Because, it's critical. We've heard you've got two ears and one mouth. Mm. Right? So you should listen twice as much as you talk. Is that true for someone in your position?
Jackets off, vulnerable for a moment. Listening is one of my weaknesses. And I'm learning actively how to get better. It's because that's why I'm becoming a student again, because I've realized what's happened to me is that I've gone to a point where I teach so much that I don't take enough time to learn. And learning, part of the process is listening. So I've consumed multiple books on listening and I'm learning how to listen better and to learn better. So to me, it's the other 50%. And I don't declare to be an expert on that. So to me, I'm only about 4 or 5 books into listening. So I won't teach anything to do with listening just yet, just in case I teach you nonsense.
Well, it's great. We can just explore it together, the three of us, and chat about it. Because the thing is, just putting myself back in that project management space, I find that project managers can be great at using their voice, whether that's correct or incorrect in terms of the five pointers you use. They're great at, this talking.
Mm.
Whether they do it effectively or not, as I say, is up for debate. But they're not so good at listening. And often I find that some of the better project managers are the ones that actually listen. I don't know it all. What are you actually saying? Or I've just said something. Did what I say, was that interpreted and heard correctly? Because if I go away and tell you as a project manager, to get this project done, we need a car, and you bring me something from the scrapyard, and I go, that's not what I asked for. Well, that's part of effective communication too, right? It's these ranges, but also conveying your message and being clear, clarity, and maybe simplifying what you're saying as well. Because often in your head, you think of these great, as Val says, it's a complex world we live in sometimes in project management space. And you've got these great ideas that come up in your head, And you might be able to use all of these things you've said, rate of speech, pausing, tone, melody, the works. But as Val says, the idea just comes out gobbled and it doesn't get consumed correctly. So I'm then wondering, and I'm rambling on a bit, so I do apologize. I'm then wondering that in order for others to be able to listen well, perhaps you as the messenger needs to know how to listen well so that you can then convey your message properly.
I think what you're speaking there to is relevance, right? If you don't listen, your reply won't be valuable because it won't be relevant. And I think that's what's really important about listening, is that it allows you to be effective and relevant. I see it happen all the time. It's like, you know, we all have a storyteller in our lives that kind of tell us stories that have nothing to do with anything. And we're just sitting there bored, but we're too afraid to tell them to shut up. I'm probably one of them in my life. And I think that's why listening is so important, because you have to listen out to what's the real problem here before you solve problems for people. I think there's a great book which has a great framework, which I definitely advise all project managers get. And it's a book called The Coaching Habit by Michael Gunbay Stainer. And the book talks about how to listen more effectively as well. And there's a beautiful framework where he teaches, you know, and this is a simple situation, but let's just use a bit of the framework and definitely get the book. I won't give the whole framework. But he says, first of all, when you're sitting down with someone who may be unclear or maybe has a problem, sit down and don't assume anything. Be curious and sit down. And the first question you ask is, you say, hey, what's on your mind? So you assume nothing. That's the brilliant about that question, is you go, what's on your mind? Because you're not making any assumptions. And they go, A, B, and C. And you go, huh, what else? Again, making no assumptions, trying to dig further. What else? And then they talk to more. And then you go, tell me more. Keep digging and let them empty their minds so you get the full picture. And then you ask them another question so you can listen. You say, well, tell me, what's the real problem here, do you think? What's the real problem? Let them prioritize in their own minds. And they'll go, ah, this is the real problem. I'm probably trying to do too much at once. And you go, oh, interesting. But how can I help you is the third question. So again, you're making no assumptions at all. You go, how can I help you? And they go, well, I really could use some help here. And if you help me do this, I could be more effective. Oh, interesting. Well, what do you feel is the main thing you got from today's kind of meeting? These four questions you ask, there's a few more, but these four questions you ask, you've used no brain power to ask these questions. So you don't feel mentally exhausted, A, but B, you're also practicing to listen. And that helped me become a better project manager in a sense in my team, because I've managed a small team of three. And when something goes wrong, I don't immediately come in with a solution and be like, you know, da, 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 I'll save the world. But I come in and I listen. I go, what's wrong? Tell me more. Tell me more. Tell me more. What else? And I get the full picture and I let them problem solve, but I listen in the process. And that to me was a great little framework that allowed me to practice listening, but then also help my own people solve their own problems.
No, that's fascinating.
Great book. No, that's great. Once you read the whole book, it's fantastic.
Books are great. Val and I love books. I think the only problem with books is we don't ever have enough time to read all of them. but on that, I wanted to then ask you, it popped in my mind, in the current climate, and even when we were in the office physically, a lot of communication happened on email or perhaps text or communicator. How can we translate your five pointers into written communication? Because now it becomes a little bit more difficult, right? Is there a way? Can you?
Yeah. First of all, when you can, pick up the phone and call the person.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and obviously that's the easiest fix. And when you can't, then write the email. But to me, to so many of people who reach out to me, and you know, whether it's on social media or even email, I use techniques where I send them back a voice message. Yeah. Because I know that I can communicate so much more meaning with my voice as compared to with just the quick text message, because I give them the opportunity to read it in the wrong way. So, I'm sure with Val, you've experienced me sending you a voice message on LinkedIn because I refuse to just give text.
Yeah, I was about to say that. I think we were messaging on LinkedIn and then you just left a voice message and it was a lot clearer and it was quicker. And I'm like, oh, I've never done that before. And you gave me the idea of doing it and now I do it. because I'm easier. Yeah. I'm not usually on the road, like, you know, between places. Like, I'll just get this quick little voice memo in. Is that the new way of doing things? Do you think that's a trend that should be picked up?
Well, especially if you learn how to use your voice well, and you can start to inject care, you can start to inject compassion, kindness, empathy, you know, motivation, inspiration into the message when you leave a voice message. All of a sudden now, I'm not just telling you something, I'm giving you some good vibes. And then that deepens our connection that we feel for each other, therefore builds rapport. Therefore, the next time I ask you to do something, you're more likely to do it. So to me, these are all building blocks of a great relationship. So to me, when you can, call the person. And, you know, I know lots of people avoid this, but then leave them a voice message. You know, LinkedIn has that built in now. All the apps have that built in now. And I even do it on my phone, on my iPhone, and then I attach it to an email and then just send it to them. And I say, hey, just, you know, and sometimes I'm not even in the car, but I'm sitting at my desk, but I'm like, hey, I'm just in the car and I just wanted to leave you a quick message. Hey, great job on that project you did last. Craig, seriously, that was amazing video editing work, especially the bit where you did this. And when they're listening to it, they're like, yeah, I did good work. Whereas what do you write on an email? Great job on the last project. Well done. Full stop.
Yeah.
I mean, do you feel that? You don't feel that. You read it and you go, oh, cool. Thanks. I'm glad you liked it. But words have, there's so many more things I can inject into it. And it deepens our connection. You'll probably work harder. You'll probably do more for me the next time I ask because we've deepened the connection.
Yeah. Yeah. Excellent. I was just thinking about that. Yeah, it's exactly right. I think, and because we get so many, I mean, email is probably the worst. I mean, we get hundreds and hundreds of emails. How sincere is it when you're rewarding and recognizing people's good work and you turn around and you go, great job. You put a little star. There's an exclamation mark. Maybe there's two. That's, you know, it's like,
you leave an emoticon. But that's good. But if you do that, that's like extra bonus points. But here's the thing. I speak so much faster than I can type. Maybe you're a faster touch typer than I can talk, but I bet I can out talk you. You won't be able to out type my talking. But what I'm saying is it takes just the same amount of time to record a voice message. It's the same amount of time. Just record it. It's what I do. I do that most of the times. And look, there are times when it's inappropriate, right? You know, if you're writing a one-page email, don't record the voice because then they'll be like, wait, which part was that again? Oh, crap, I got to oh, damn it. Ineffective communication. When you can, those short little emails, add some life, add some personality, add some care, add some effort.
It's free practice as well because there's nothing on the line for it.
What it is. Yeah. Yeah. It's free practice. I was going to follow on with that question because we're talking about modes of communication now, and this is a really good topic because there's so many ways to get your message out there, but there's obviously better ones like using your voice. What about nonverbal cues? So we talked about kind of the tonality, the voice, how to use that pitch to communicate. We talked about the active listening, which is a really important bit. That's the 50-50. You got to receive and send. There's a signal going on between two or three or whatever it is. What about the nonverbals? Because I've seen, and you know, I've done some reading and some study, and obviously nonverbal communication is so important as well. And as a showman yourself, being on the stage, talking to thousands of people, there's different ways of interacting with audiences based on the size of them and the types of audiences. What's your views on nonverbal communication and tips?
Look, it's a very big topic. And the first thing I would say about nonverbal communication is that understand that your voice is connected to your body and your body is connected to your voice. And often people are so afraid when it comes to voice and communication. You know, you ask them what's the problem. They always go, oh, I'm afraid of the monotone voice. And I've still yet to find someone who's truly a monotone. They're quite a rare phenomenon. But when you have a monotone body, that's when you have a monotone voice. If you move your body, you move your voice. So the big thing to understand is your body's connected to your voice connected to your body. So a monotone voice comes from a monotone body. So the moment you start to move your body, you'll move your voice. So that's one thing. And the reason why body language is so important is because body language supports the things you're saying. So notice if we just rewind this video in a second, I just did in a small gesture, your body language supports the things you're saying. So I'm just moving my hand slightly forward to gesture support. Right? So your body language supports the thing you're saying, right? So if I do that without body language, your body language supports the things you're saying. It's less effective because it supports your communication by enhancing the clarity. Notice how to me, this is enhancing clarity, kind of just using this small gesture. But that enhances clarity for people. It opens up their mind. And they've done extensive research as well that people who use more body language are perceived as being leaders. And the reason for that is because when you use body language, you have more presence because you're taking up more space. So when you take up more presence, people perceive you to be more of a leader. And I actually just taught a big module on body language today in my class. So first you have to become aware of its importance and how when you don't use hand gestures, you're decreasing the clarity again of your message. So when you use body language, you enhance the clarity. Now, it's a big topic, so it depends where we want to go. But I think one of the most important areas of body language, or the most important body language when we're communicating with people virtually, it's our face. And to make it relevant during the pandemic, everyone's talking virtually. Make sure you're aware of your face. Make sure you're moving your face. So many people are not aware of this. And then what happens when you're listening, you forget what your nonverbals are doing. You forget what your face is doing when you're listening. And sometimes when we listen, we fall victim to we don't realize that what are people looking at when we're talking? People are looking at your listening face. So become more aware of what your face is doing. Make sure, and this is a weird one, but body language virtually, it's very important that you look into the camera when you speak. And this is the new world we live in now. But the rule of thumb that I teach my students is that in the virtual world, when you're speaking, look into the camera almost 100% of the time. Because where are people looking when you're talking? People are looking into your eyes. And if I'm looking at the both of you, which I was at the beginning because I wanted to connect with you both personally, selfishly. But if I was looking at you both, I'd be doing this. And imagine if I spoke to you both like this the entire time, you'd feel a bit less connected to me. Whereas to me, I want to give you my eyes while I'm talking. So look to the camera when you're speaking almost 100% of the time. And then when you're listening, the body language with your eyes, make sure you're looking at the camera 80% of the time. Give them your eyes while you're speaking. And then 20% of the time, just glance at them to see what they're doing. So if you notice during this podcast, I'll have quick glances at you both to see if you're both still listening. And just glance, just quickly glance. Like I quickly glance to see if you laughed. Quickly glance, but then I give you my eyes again. So it's kind of like, again, you know, that's the most important body language. And the face that we should have, if we had to choose a default face, is one of a slight smile. Just a slight smile at the corner of your lips. A slight smile is a nice default face to be in. Okay? Not serial killer smile, not... Yeah, that's slightly frightening, but just a slight smile. Mm. And the other thing I'll say for in-person connection is I'll say, be big as the room, okay? So if I was speaking to a stadium of people with 27,000 people, I bring much bigger body language, bigger voice, everything bigger. I'm a bigger version of Vin. Whereas right now I'm bringing a smaller version of Vin because there's just the three of us. So it's a smaller version of me. So keep in mind as a rule of thumb, body language, be big as the room. Be big as the room. That's a really important one. And you'll notice some people are too big for the room. You know, like imagine I was talking to all of you like this and the whole time for the podcast, you'll be like, man, what an arrogant wanker, you know, and come across in the wrong way. So be as big as the room with your body language.
Well, that explains a lot, Vin, because I've been in rooms where there's been people who think they're speaking to 27,000 people, but they're only speaking to 10. Yes. And I've been in rooms where you've had, yeah, the reverse is true. You have the voice. Yeah. So it's very interesting and it's really good insight into how to manage all of those. There's so many really interesting facets. And I guess the idea to this as well, Vin, like magic is practice, right? The more you do it, the better you get at it. So, you know, just my final question around this is like, well, what's the best way of practicing? I mean, we talked about voice memos and all that, but what do you have a routine or how do you kind of inspire your students?
Yeah, look, I see in the world of magic, one of the key ingredients that help you become successful as a magician is self-awareness. And as magicians, we have to build extreme self-awareness in that, like there's devices that I've built in my house where there's three or four mirrors that I stand in front of while I practice. And that allows me to build, you know, almost 360 awareness of what people see around me. And the better you get at self-awareness as a magician, the more what we call angle proof we become as a magician, which is like the ultimate self-awareness you can get to is when you're fully 100% angle proof is what we call it in our world. And magicians who are angle proof are the ones that get really good. The ones who aren't, that's the difference between magic and, oh, it's a cool trick, bro. So I've tried to help my students develop the same kind of awareness in communication. So what I teach them is a process called record and review. And record and review is a simple technique where you get your phone, everyone's got one now, with a camera, and film a video of yourself speaking for 5 minutes. Five full minutes of yourself speaking, the content's not that important. Talk about something you're passionate about. Talk about what you had for lunch. Film it for 5 minutes, standing up preferably. And then when you review it, kind of like the three mirrors, you review it in three different ways. The first time you review it, turn the sound all the way up and just listen. And you're doing an auditory review. So just listen, turn the phone around so you can't see yourself and just listen. Take note of the foundations I shared on this podcast. How's my rate, volume? Take notes. Just take notes. And then here's the intriguing thing. All of you currently have a list of what you do like in a communicator and what you don't like in a communicator. And for all of us, this list is different. Just like how we have different tastes in clothing and hairstyles or whatever. And we've all got different tastes. And you've got a list. And you have a list because the last time you went to a conference, when a speaker goes on stage and they speak, if they check the boxes of what you find to be boring, you disengage, you grab your phone and you go to your social media or YouTube. Or you go in your head to thinking about things you need to do later. But if a speaker ticks the boxes of what you do like, you put your phone down and you go, oh, I better listen to this. But that's because in our heads, we all have a list of what we like and what we don't like. You've never applied this list to yourself because very rarely are people willing to watch themselves nor listen to themselves because they go, no, I don't sound like that. And no, I surely don't look like that. And the unfortunate truth is, yes, you do look like that. And yes, you do sound like that. So when you listen to yourself, you'll start to build awareness. Oh, I like that. That's a bit of a limitation I should try to improve upon. Write down the things auditory wise. Then the second time you review it, second mirror, you put it on mute and then you press play and then you just watch yourself and take notes. What do you like visually? What don't you like visually? What do you do with your hands? Are you moving around aimlessly? Are you moving your face? Take notes, build self-awareness. And then the final way you review it, third mirror, you don't listen to it and you don't watch it. You get the video transcribed. And when you get it transcribed, they always give you an option. Would you like us to leave in the non-words and the filler words? Yes, please leave them in. And then when you get it transcribed, sit there with a red highlighter because it indicates danger. Highlight the words you use over and over again, your filler words. Highlight the sounds you make to fill the silence. Bring this to the front of your awareness. Bring this to the forefront of your mind. Now you've got a list of things to work on. Now you're building self-awareness. Most people are not self-aware when it comes to how they're coming across with their vocal image and their visual image. You look to a mirror to dress yourself. When's the last time you looked into a communication mirror? There could be something metaphorically stuck in your teeth. And it's been there for 30 years. So best get rid of it.
Yeah, agreed. That's great advice, great tips. And takes me back. I did one of these courses as well here in the UK by sort of a professional coach the company got in for us. And he did something similar. He sat us down at a desk and said, present a small topic for a couple of minutes, recorded us. And he said, stand and do the same thing. And he played it back. You know, almost exactly what you're doing, but you've been a bit more succinct as the various steps. And it just shows you what, you know, what you think you're doing versus what you're actually doing is really, really important there. So thanks for that. But the other thing that it reminded me of, and this is really something that I think people will go back on this pod and replay and rewind and pick up those tips. I've been making notes. I know those that are going to listen to this are going to be stopping, pausing, writing notes as well. But I asked him at the end of that session, I said, and I'm going to ask you the same question. If there's one thing you want us to take away that's listening to this, of everything you've said in this pod, what would it be? While you think, I'll tell you what he told me. He said, the one thing I want you to take away, if nothing else, one thought, one breath. That's what he said to me. Yours might be different, but I love just a key takeaway if you've got one for us.
Mm. Yeah, I'm just thinking there's just so many.
There's loads. I know I've put you on the spot here. But yeah, that's what on the Project Chatter. We put you on the spot.
Yeah, I love it. No, it's good. This is what I would say. And you have one of the most beautiful instruments in the world that can truly move people, that can truly be used to make the world a better place. I mean, you look at all the big instances in the world where the world changes. It's usually based around a message or a voice or someone, Martin Luther King or Steve Jobs or Elon Musk, these people who do things. And you have an instrument too. Realize that this is a beautiful instrument and play it. You have songs that you need to play. And this is what my wish is for you. At the end of your life, I wish that you play all the beautiful songs you have to play so that when you die with no songs left in you. There are songs of connection. There are songs of kindness. There are songs of strength. There are songs of power that you must play in your life. This is how we make this world a different place. We make it a better place by playing songs of compassion, songs of kindness, songs of love. Play this beautiful instrument. Don't just use it throughout this lifetime. Learn to play it, because when you play it well, you move the world, you change the world. Play your instrument. Live full and play it fully. Die empty with nothing left and no music left in you.
Brilliant. I love it, Vin. Thanks so much. And I want to thank you as well for your time, because, I mean, geez, an hour's gone very quickly, and Val, we could spend much more with Vin, but I know we're limited on time. Vin, any final thoughts that you want to leave us with, topics you want to dive into quickly or anything? The stage is yours.
I'll leave you with a quote, and I'll leave you with a quote from Raymond Joseph Teller from Penn and Teller. He's the one that plays the mute, but however, he speaks in real life and has a beautiful voice. And he has this line where he says, "Magic is just someone spending more time on something than anybody would reasonably expect." And what he's saying there is, he's saying that the art of astonishment and the art of amazement is not reserved just for magicians. The art of astonishment and the art of amazement is for everyone. But the question you have to ask yourself, especially as project managers, is will you spend more time than anybody reasonably expects on the way you communicate? Because if you do, you too can be astonishing and amazing with all things you do. That's it.
Wow. I was just leaving a dramatic pause there, taking notes from you.
Me too.
Val, mic drop.
Yeah, exactly. We need to do that. Val, any final thoughts from yourself?
No, Vin, it's been an absolute pleasure. Obviously, we've been trying to catch up for a while, you being in the US and then COVID hit, but we will catch up at some point. I, for one, will be signing up for the workshop. We've talked about this already. But thank you for your time today. Your insights are going to ripple across projects across the world. So you're making a massive contribution to our craft, and we really appreciate it.
Hey, much love. Great to speak with you both. And it was fun. Thank you.
Agreed. It was fun for all of us. No, as we were saying, Vin, thank you so much. It's been great. It's been loads of fun, but also it's been very informative. And I think the listeners will really appreciate this one. You know, as we head into the festive season, something great in terms of entertainment. Us having fun, people listening to that will also have fun listening back. And thank you for your time. Again, we would love to have you back. We'll keep an eye on what you're doing as well, because it'll be of interest. But appreciate your time today. So folks, that's all we have time for on this episode, but it doesn't have to stop here. Support our charities and access blogs at projectchatterpodcast.com. Don't forget to hit subscribe on our YouTube channel and your podcast player so you don't miss the next one. A massive thank you to Vin Zhang. Thank you all for listening. Till next time, we say stay safe, be disruptive, and have fun doing it. From me and Val, it's bye for now. The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this podcast belong solely to the participating individuals and not necessarily to the individual's employer, organization, committee, or other group or individual. Additionally, any views or opinions are not intended to malign any religion, ethnic group, club, organization, company, or individual.